This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through his series on the Sermon on the Mount. Now here's Pastor Sandy with his message entitled, Are People Your Priority?
Never let a demand for your rights supersede your concern for the soul of another person. In the long run, our love for people is more important than our rights. And here Jesus mentions four rights in particular that often get in the way of people loving people. First is our right to dignity. You see, another person's insult shouldn't stop me loving them. Second is our right to possessions. His soul should be more important to me than my shirt. Third is our right to convenience. I should forfeit what suits me in order to save him. And then fourth, our right to money. I would rather a person survive than me thrive. You see, love is willing to forego my rights. Again, hear Jesus' words, verse 39. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. In other words, are you willing to endure an insult, an indignity, to sacrifice your pride for the soul of another person? Oh, the ongoing feud between Winston Churchill and Lady Astor, it was legendary. Once Lady Astor, she reprimanded Churchill, "Why, Winston, you're drunk." Churchill replied, "And Astor, you're ugly, but I'll be sober in the morning." How do you respond to that kind of barb, that kind of degradation, that kind of insult? It stings, doesn't it? Words do hurt. How do you reply when someone insults your work, or they belittle your child, or they criticize your decorating ladies? Oh, that's a big deal. I'll never have anything to do with her again. That's the attitude Jesus is combating. Don't let your pride write off another person. Oh, nobody can say that to me and get away with it. Well, why not? What's so special about you that you can't be criticized, even unfairly? See, it's been said, where pride is present, love is absent. 1 Corinthians 13 teaches, love suffers long, bears all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Jesus is telling us to swallow our pride. Turn the other cheek. Refuse to let what you think is your right to your dignity hinder you from loving that other person. Verse 40 deals with our right to possessions. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. In Jesus' day, everyone wore two garments, a tunic or an inner robe, and then a cloak or an outer robe. The cloak doubled as a bedroll. Under Hebrew law, you could sue a man for his tunic, his inner garment. You've heard the expression, take the shirt right off my back. This is its origin. You could sue for a man's inner garment, but not his cloak or outer garment. For without a coat, how can a man survive the cold nights? And yet Jesus is saying that if a man really needs your tunic, be willing to give him your cloak also. The point being, his soul is more important than your possessions. How often do we put stuff ahead of people? Have you ever missed an opportunity to extend love because you were too stingy with your stuff? You know, that's pretty shallow. Once there was a woman whose husband had bought her a brand new car. It was just 2 days off the lot when she scraped the side of it of another vehicle as she was pulling into a parking lot. What was she going to tell her husband? When the policeman asked for her proof of insurance, she reached into the glove box. She pulled out an envelope. Inside the envelope was a card and a note from her husband. The note read, "Honey, in case of an accident, remember it's you I love, not the car." Here was a man who valued the people in his life more than his earthly possessions. Have you ever put stuff ahead of your spouse? Have you ever made money more important than your marriage? There's a scene from an old movie where a horse owner, he chews out his daughter for riding his prize stallion. Ugly words are exchanged. She stomps out of the room. His sister tells him, "You treat that wretched colt better than your own daughter." Some of us treat the car we've restored, or our precious furniture, or our golf clubs with more care and gentleness than we do our own kids. Jesus is telling us, never value your possessions more than people. And the same is true with our right to convenience. This is the point in verse 41. "And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too." You see, under Roman law, a soldier could legally recruit a civilian to carry his armor 1 Roman mile, just a tad shorter than our mile. Needless to say, this could be an inconvenience to the person recruited. I mean, you could be late for work. And thus, the average Jew would count out every step. And when he reached that 5,280th foot, that was it. He'd throw down the armor, he'd thumb his nose at the soldier, and he'd go off, go his way. There was no love in this. There was no concern for the soldier. And this is why Jesus calls his followers to take a different approach. Rather than the inconvenience, rather than view it as an inconvenience, his followers should see the same circumstances as an opportunity. Jesus is saying, don't just go 1 mile, go two. Let that soldier know that God loves him and that you do too. Seek to build a friendship with him. Use it as an occasion to convey God's love. And you see, this is how Jesus wants us to view our inconveniences. Perhaps you've been sent to an office across town, and it is such a hassle. Or maybe you're being required to work longer days. Don't just work 8 hours. Go another hour and be happy about it. Do it because you care about the person who's asked for your help. Love puts people above our right to convenience. And if you really understand this, trust me, you'll never lack opportunities to share the gospel or people who'll want to listen. And then verse 42, don't put your right to money above your love for people. He says, give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Of course, Jesus isn't assuming that we should just give out indiscriminately. Notice he's assuming that we do have some money. We do have some savings. We have put some money back. There's nothing wrong with saving for a rainy day. And Jesus isn't telling us that our savings should be handed out to anyone and everyone who's looking for some money. All giving should be accompanied by discernment. But here's what Jesus is saying. Never let your own financial security become more important to you than someone else's eternal destiny. All we have belongs to God and should be made available for His purposes. Don't be more concerned with adding cash to your stash than showing the love of Jesus to the people around you. Once the cows and the pigs, they were discussing why the cows were more popular than the pigs. One of the pigs kind of snorted and said, "It's not fair. All you cows give is milk and cream, but we pigs give bacon and ham. People even pickle our feet. I don't see how you cows are more popular than us pigs." The cow thought for a minute and replied, "Maybe it's because we give while we're still living." Hey, one day, we'll give it all to somebody, probably a lot to the government. None of us are going to be able to take it with us. And Jesus is telling us that true righteousness loves people more than it worries about its own security. Love for people needs to be a Christian's priority, not our dignity or our possessions or our convenience or our money. And so my question to you this morning, are people your priority? People top Jesus' priority list, and hopefully the same is true for us, even people who were considered enemies. Listen to verse 43. "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." I mean, it's hard to always love your friends. Have you ever been betrayed or disappointed by a friend, even a church friend? Of course you have. We all have. I like the little jingle. To live above with saints we love will certainly be glory. To live below with saints we know, well, that's a different story. It's tough enough to love a friend, but in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus stretches us far beyond our limits. He expects us to love our enemies. Lord, you got to be kidding. Are you serious? I'm supposed to love the gal who's telling vicious rumors about me? Or the boss who wants to get me fired? Or the next door neighbor who plays his music into the wee hours of the morning? Or the guy down the street who can't take care of his 357 stray cats? Or that person who parks his 18-wheeler in front of his house, therefore my house? Is a wife really supposed to love the husband who turns his back on her and runs off with that younger trollop? Is a man supposed to love the competitor who wants to put him out of business? Is a girl supposed to love the animal who raped her? How can a man love the drunk driver with all the DUIs who hits his son and who kills his son? Are you telling me I'm supposed to love the sperm donor who never cared enough to bother to check in and find out how life was going for the Sunnyside? Well, if you've chosen to follow Jesus, I'm going to answer this question for you. The answer to all of these questions is yes and more. For Jesus commands us to love, bless, do good, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Yes, we need to love even our enemies. For Jesus knows that the greatest force on planet Earth isn't a tornado or a tsunami or a lightning bolt or a volcano or even the splitting of the atom. The mightiest power is love. It's been said, to injure an enemy puts you below him. To take revenge on an enemy makes you even. It's only by forgiving an enemy that you rise above him. Kill your enemies and you'll only make more. Their sons will seek revenge and hunt you down. The only way to truly destroy your enemies is by turning them into friends. And the only way you can do that is with love. As Jesus mentions in verse 43, the Jews taught you should love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And they were half right. The Old Testament did say to love your neighbor, but nowhere did it teach for you to hate your enemy. And our enemy is anyone who's undeserving of our love or unloving in return. You see, your enemies are the folks in your life who don't deserve the time of day. They're the leeches. All they care about is themselves. They take and take and take some more. They suck the blood out of everyone around them and never bother to give back. An enemy is a person least deserving of your love, yet this is the person the love of Jesus has you target. And understand exactly what he means when Jesus tells us to love our enemy. There are four Greek words that get translated by our one English word, love. Storge is parental love. It's shared within a family. Eros is romantic love. It's sexual in nature. Phileo is brotherly love. It's the love between friends. But fourthly, there's agape. And this is the love spoken of most often in the New Testament. It's supernatural love. It's God's love. And it's the love that's spoken of here. You see, agape love is more than a feeling or just goosebumps. It's a decision. These other types of love are generated when conditions are ripe. But agape is an act of the will. It's a commitment to love that's unaffected by my mood. And this is the love of Jesus. When his body buckled under the weight of the wood and the spikes were hammered into his flesh, there was nothing pleasurable about his experience. It was about Jesus proving his commitment to the will of God and his love for us and how much he desired for us to be saved. God would never ask a rape victim to have warm, fuzzy feelings toward her assailant or a wife to get giddy over a husband who's abused her? That would be inhumane. Notice Jesus doesn't even ask us to like our enemy. Just love him. Love him with the love of God. Richard Linsky writes, I cannot like a low, mean criminal who may have robbed me and threatened my life. I cannot like a lying, slanderous fellow who has insulted me again and again. But I can, by the grace of Christ, love them all, see what is wrong with them, and work to free them from their vicious ways. It's interesting, when Jesus tells us to love our enemy, the first specific action he mentions isn't a handshake or a hug or a handout. He just tells us to pray for them. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Before you even face your enemy or go to your enemy, pray for him. For once we make our enemy the object of our prayers, then something happens in us that softens our heart. Pity replaces resentment. Compassion replaces bitterness. When I look at my enemy through God's eyes, I get a new perspective. I can look past the hurt he's inflicted on me, and I can see the hurt that's been motivating him. One author writes, if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm our hostilities. Notice how Jesus begins verse 45. He says, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. Realize, we are never more related to Jesus than when we love our enemies. This is the greatest opportunity you have for Christ's likeness. And yet, this is the greatest point of our own failure, is it not? For there is no way that I or you can love my enemies in my own strength. It becomes possible only when I realize that what God asked me to do, he equips me to do. The rest of verse 45 reads, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Realize, none of us deserve to see another sunrise. Hey, if you got what was coming to you, it would rain on your neighbor's yard, not yours. But God shows everybody a common grace. Just as a rain-soaked lawn or a golden tan has nothing to do with the merits of its owner, likewise, God's forgiveness and his acceptance has nothing to do with our worthiness. Our history with God is all grace. And now he asks us to treat others with that same grace. Notice verse 46. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? I mean, what's the big deal? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? In the first century, no profession was as hated as tax collector. These guys worked for Rome. They were enemy collaborators. They were traitors. They were greedy, seedy folks. And yet even a tax collector loves a person who loves him. It doesn't take God for you to love a friend. Oswald Sanders writes, the master expects from his disciples such conduct as can be explained only in terms of the supernatural. The God quality in our lives, or the lack thereof, will always be seen in how we treat our enemies. He says, and if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? I've heard it said, to return evil for good is devilish. To return good for good is human, but to return good for evil is divine. Again, you're never more like God than when you welcome and love your enemy. Ed McCulley was one of five missionaries to venture into the rainforest of Ecuador to take the gospel to the Aka Indians. Just 2 days after the men had arrived, they were murdered by the natives they'd hoped to reach. Rather than grow bitter, Ed's father prayed, Lord, let me live long enough to see those fellows saved who killed our boys, that I may throw my arms around them and tell them I love them because they love my Christ. Two of those widows, Elizabeth Elliott and Rachel Saint, refused to let bereavement make them bitter. These women returned to Ecuador to share the gospel with the very Indians who had murdered their husbands. 10 years after their husband's martyrdom, a group of Aka Indians, now Christians, traveled to England to testify of the love of Jesus. You see, love had conquered hate. That's why I say the greatest power on this planet today is the power of love. Do you believe in love? C.S. Lewis made a profound statement. Do not waste time bothering about whether you love your neighbor. Act as if you did. As soon as we do this, we find one of the great secrets. When you are behaving as if you love someone, you will presently come to love him. In other words, if God is in you, then have faith enough to give his power and his love a chance to kick in. Don't worry so much about your feelings. Put your faith in God's faithfulness. He'll come through in you. Which brings us to verse 48. Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. What's spoken of here isn't a moral or a religious perfection. It's love. It's more than an outward righteousness. It's putting love before your pride and your possessions and your convenience and your finances. It's a love for your enemies, not just your friends. And when you love in that way, there is a perfection about it. There is the same perfection in that there is in God. You are loving in the way that God loves you. Martin Luther King once said, I have decided to stick to love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. And you see, here's the irony. Hold on to the hate in your heart, and your heart will harden. Infection will spread, wounds will fester, fever rises, grow bitter, and the healing that you desire will elude you. I know there's some people in this room today who've been holding on to their bitterness and holding on to their hurts. Oh, they want to be healed, but they think that by holding on to their hurts that there's some healing in that. There's not. You'll only make yourself harder. The healing is in the loving. Choose to love. Choose to prioritize people. Even love your enemies, at least to the point of praying for them. And a mysterious healing will begin to occur in your heart. Here's a profound truth. Love cures people, both the ones who receive it and the ones who give it. The Nazi concentration camp at Ravensbrück was the site of 92,000 murders of Jewish men and women and children. And in the horrific ruins, there was a note near the body of a dead child. It read, O Lord, remember not only the men and women of goodwill, but also those of ill will. But do not only remember the suffering they have inflicted on us, remember the fruits we bought thanks to this suffering, our comradeship, our loyalty, our humility, the courage, the generosity, the greatness of heart, which has grown out of all of this. And when they come to judgment, let all the fruits that we have borne be their forgiveness. There's just something beautiful about that, something amazing about that. I mean, love for one's enemies is not what you would expect to find within the flames of Holocaust. And yet God's love pops up in the strangest places. God's love has healing properties. You may never see love win over your enemy, but love will save you from the bottomless pit of bitterness. Well, here's my closing thought. It's my question for you. Are people your priority in life? More than your dignity? More than your possessions? More than your convenience? More than your money? Is love what matters most to you? When your enemies attack, fight back with love.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Sermon on the Mount. You can learn a great deal about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at the website, you'll find today's message and many other messages from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area, or will be passing through, you can get directions and times of the services. Again, the website for all this information is sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the Sermon on the Mount. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.